guys, I thought I might start off this episode with a confession. I've never been to Bali before.
Never?
No. Is that kind of a problem?
For a travel writer. Is
it I'd like to know why not.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into that. I've got an idea of Bali. Well, okay, so I should mention, I have actually visited Bali before. I went there for 2 nights for a resort opening in Seminyak. So I've seen the road to and from the airport. I've seen the inside of the W Hotel, and that is literally all that I know about Bali.
Ben, you have not been to Bali.
Technically, yes, but not really.
Yeah, okay. And this is one of Australia's favourite holiday destinations. So, you know, Bali is an island. It seemed like it's loved by everyone, by families and singles, by surfers and yoga practitioners, by party animals, by the spiritually inclined. It's a place to go to relax, to have adventures, to have experiences, to be inspired. And yet I've never really been to Bali. Hi, I'm Ben Groundwater, and you're listening to Flight of Fancy, the traveller.com.au podcast. Today we're talking about Bali, or at least my two guests are going to talk about Bali, and I'm going to listen. What makes this place so popular? Why do Australians go there more than just about anywhere else? What is there to do? What is there to see? We will soon find out. And speaking of those guests, I should really introduce them. First up is a traveller.com.au columnist, also known as the Tripologist, a man who left his heart in Ubud, Michael Gebeki.
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Michael. Great to have you on board. Also with us, she's the associate editor of Sunday Life magazine and a passionate traveller to a certain tropical island, Genevieve Quigley. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Ben.
Thanks so much for coming along, guys.
Pleasure.
So do you think I'm the only Australian who's never been to Bali?
Possibly.
I feel like I could be, yeah. It's such a popular destination, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's a few people. Anytime I write something singing the praises of Bali and putting it on a pedestal, which is pretty easy for me to do.
Yeah.
I get a few letters that will say from people who will say, I haven't been to Bali and I never want to go there.
Right.
So you're not alone,
but
you're a small and very eccentric minority.
Yeah, that's how I like to describe myself. Jen, what was the attraction for you when you first went there?
First went?
Yeah.
Look, it was my 10-year wedding anniversary with my husband. And my kids were just old enough, I thought, to, you know, handle a decent overseas holiday.
They were sort of, so how old was that?
They were 5 and 8.
Okay.
And I know, like they'd travelled before then, but I like the idea. They were old enough, you know, on the plane, they could sit together and my husband and I could be together. So
right.
It was almost like a romantic holiday, but with, you know, two other people along.
Yeah.
And we looked at various locations. I have to admit, it's just so cheap.
Right. Yeah.
That was a really, you know, really big selling point. So, flights were cheap, accommodation was cheap, and I knew over there would be. And the type of, we were able to have, you know, a 2-week holiday instead of a 1-week holiday.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. I mean, the picture I have in my head of Bali involves a lot of bintang singlets and people watching AFL in bars in Kuta. Is that a reasonable thing to be thinking about?
I've got to confess, my last holiday, I was in a lot of sports bars. not in Kuta, in Canggu, watching the Swans.
Right.
And there is definitely that side.
Yeah.
100% there is.
Yeah.
But there's so much more than that.
Yeah, right. Have you seen that side of it, Mike?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I passed through it when I'm leaving the airport, and I never want to see it again for the rest of the time.
So where is that based?
Look, for me, everybody has their part of Bali that they love and they probably keep going back to if they're an addict of the island. For me, it's there's an area just north of Ubud.
Yeah.
So we're getting towards the heart of the island, and there's a whole lot of river valleys that come down from the higher country up above you.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of river valleys in that area. Mm-hmm. It's kind of richly pleated with rice fields and with forests and little villages. And that, to me, is the real Bali. That's what I like to say.
Right, okay.
Because you've got Ubud at kind of within easy reach.
Yeah.
And that's a nice place to have access to. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on around that area.
I remember hearing stories of Ubud maybe 10 years ago about how it was this sort of untouched paradise, this part of Bali that no one knew about.
I think
changed now?
Yeah, Eat, Pray, Love, I think, was really put Ubud, you know, sort of out there.
Yeah.
And when we first went there back in 2013, it wasn't. You know, it had been discovered.
Right.
I was surprised there were, you know, air-conditioned Ralph Lauren shops on the main street.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't what I was expecting from Ubud.
Ubud has a one-way traffic system now. It's got so bad.
Right.
And if you get caught in it, it can take you half an hour to get around the city, around the town. It's not much more than a town.
Right.
You can be stuck there for a really long time.
Yeah, okay.
It's not the kind of place where you really want to stay, I don't think. For me, anyway. You know, I want to get out. But you know, culturally, there's a lot going on in that area. There's good dances, which I'm a bit of an addict of the Balinese dances. So they're easy to see in that area.
Yeah. There's more cultural attractions in Ubud, is there, rather than the sort of beachy culture that you might be looking for around Seminyak?
Correct. Or, culture with a inverted commas. A lot of it is, as you say, Jen, it's shopping and,
Right, okay.
It's a vital part of the what you go to Bali for, but for me it's not the main reason.
Yeah. What's the real Bali for you, Jen?
Well, my husband likes to surf, so we can't stay in Ubud. We stayed there once for 4 days, and we saw it. When we first went, we stayed in Canggu, and there were sort of two places to eat when we went there for the first time.
So Canggu, paint a picture of Bali sort of geography for me. So you've got Kuta, which is kind of the main town nearest the airport.
That's correct. And then you're sort of moving out, you go to sort of Legian, then Seminyak, and then there's sort of Umalas, Canggu, and we stayed just a little bit beyond Canggu in a little village called Pereranun, which we always struggle to pronounce properly.
Well, I saw it written down.
There's a lot of R's.
Say that aloud at some point. I should practice that.
But Canggu's got some really good surf breaks. So first time we stayed there, two places to eat. That was it. So Dayus and Betel Nut. Mm-hmm. Now there's hundreds, and there's resorts going up, and there's very cool bars. Yep. So we stay in this little village. There's a river, so we're on the other side of the river. So there's no traffic. So we get scooters. I ride a bicycle everywhere.
Yeah.
We're surrounded by rice paddies, and the cows are our neighbours.
Yeah.
But then we can kind of ride down the road, cross the river, and we're in the heart of Canggu. So we have the kind of balance.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. And so it does seem to me like people get a favourite place in Bali that they keep on returning to. Is that what that is for you?
Yeah, look, we've sort of stayed at various different places, Ubud, Umalas, Canggu, and we found this one villa now. We joke that it's our holiday home because we know it, we know the area, we know all the staff there, we're friends on Facebook with the staff.
Right.
So we kind of pop back each year, and it's become our regular spot.
Yeah, okay. Let's talk about villa culture, because most holiday destinations you end up at sort of resorts or hotels, but it seems like Bali, from what I can tell, is mostly villas. Is that right?
Not mostly, but there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Sure.
And is that because they're affordable for Australians?
Yeah, they are. They're a really good deal, especially if you go over there with a family.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to have like a walled enclosure. What you get is typically a walled enclosure.
Yeah.
You get maybe even a couple of pavilions within that where you'll have separate bedrooms in each.
Mm-hmm.
Great if you've got kids who can be trusted to be by themselves and not do anything terrible.
Yeah.
And that works really well for people. And you can buy in pretty much all the services that you need. So you'll have... Yep. You'll typically have a housekeeper, but then you can buy in a cook if you want to, do that kind of stuff. You can have a driver if you want.
Yep.
But this sort of more going up the ladder. So it's very pleasant.
Yeah.
Very pleasant. You have your own swimming pool, maybe. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say there's some pretty architecturally stunning places there. I've done a bit of research on sort of the Airbnb style places, and there's some amazing like treehouse style things near Ubud and really beautiful beach villas as well, which normally would be out of the price range of most people.
I think for us that's the appeal, that we've got this place all to ourselves. We've got a pool all to ourselves because I always joke that we're clothing optional in Bali, and you can't be that like that at the resort.
Yeah. Well, you can, but you're very...
You might get arrested.
Find yourself.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got the whole place to yourself, which for us really appeals. I know for some people, like with younger kids, they, they may have concerns. None of the pools have fences. I think you have to call in a fence or you have to order one.
Yeah.
Some people love all the services that a resort has. I mean, I love the villa, The housekeepers come in the morning. The first question's, what would you like for breakfast today?
Right.
They go into the kitchen, they make the whole family breakfast, and they clean up. For me, as a mum that's doing that every day, for my kids in general life, it is heaven. I love that villa life because it's, having that private space. But I can really see the appeal of a resort, as well for, as I said, people with much younger kids.
Yep.
People who just like to be around, I guess, a bit of a buzz.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, are there still places in Bali where there are just no tourists at all?
Yep.
Can you properly get away from it all?
You really can.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about it, as tourists are kind of like lemmings. They tend to stay in one place.
Yeah,
so
that
southern part of the island, Kuta, Legian, Seminyak, that's a lot of massive people down there. So getting away from it is pretty easy. I mean, by the time you get to Ubud, there's a lot fewer people.
Yep.
Start going north of Ubud, you go over the mountains,
and
you will get to places where villages where they, you're a rarity still,
okay.
which is really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course,
You can't watch the AFL, though, can you?
Well, yeah, there are drawbacks to getting away from it all.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Go over in summer.
Yeah. But there, look, certainly places where you can still, you know, experience kind of a very traditional side of Balinese life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very nice.
Are cultural experiences big for you guys when you're over there, Jen? What is there to do in a cultural sense?
Look, I have to be honest. We're traveling with two small children.
Yeah.
We've gone to the Balinese dances.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted them to get into it.
Yep, they did not.
They didn't. And, you know, look. Look, my husband
sounds
and
like
I probably.
Sounds like a water park is maybe more
look,
there.
Look, a water park's more their kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, we've done things like bicycle tours where they've taken us, you know, into really small villages, mm-hmm. and to temples and into. Yep. Last time we went into, you know, a Balinese home and we really got to experience that. And, you know, we rode through, you know, this amazing kind of. Mandarin orchard, and we're like picking, you know, mandarin straight off the trees.
Yeah.
So we do a bit of that, but mm-hmm. that was, you know, combined with a bike ride down from a volcanic mountain. So it was lots of fun for the kids.
Right. Yeah. How about you, Mike? What are the cultural things?
Yeah,
that you do
I really like Balinese dancing. I mean, for a lot of people.
So what is Balinese dancing? Talk me through it.
Well, it's based on the Hindu classics, but of course the Balinese have their own take on Hinduism.
Yeah.
So over the years, they've evolved this very, very stylized form of dancing, which of course goes along with the gamelan orchestra as a background.
Mm-hmm.
So it's typically performed at night. There are only about probably half a dozen classical dances, but they're derived from things like from the Hindu classics, things like the Ramayana.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of stories feature are the sort of basis for it. The dances are amazing costumes, first of all. A lot of masks, and it's very exaggerated, the whole thing. You know, the princesses will be these astonishingly beautiful young women.
Yeah.
And the villains will have these incredible masks on that just look horrifying, and they'll grunt and groan a lot.
Yeah.
It's all pretty exaggerated, but it's a lot of fun, I must say.
Yeah. Where do you go to see something like that?
You can see it pretty much anywhere, but the places where I like to go are trying to find villages where it's being performed for the villagers themselves rather than as a tourist event.
Is that a difficult thing to find?
If you go out, no, it's not particularly.
Okay.
They still do kind of advertise them because they like to have tourists come because tourists pay more money than the locals will see it for free.
Right.
You will pay some money, so therefore that goes to help support the whole thing. I like to find villages where it's being performed at night, of course, and often you'll see it done by flares rather than artificial lighting.
Oh, right, okay.
And that's really special for me. That's really fantastic.
Yeah.
You know?
It feels like a genuine cultural
experience.
It
really is. Yeah. Instead of a generator humming away in the background providing the lighting.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful experience. I love it. Really do.
You've got
the smell of Credex cigarettes around you, you know, that kind of clove smell, which is so distinctive, isn't it?
It's almost as soon as you get off the plane.
Yeah.
I feel like,
That's the Balinese cigarettes.
Yeah, we always get off the plane. Oh, it's that Bali smell. You do. The spice. And there's a little bit of a kind of funk? Not so good smell.
There's a funk.
Yeah, there is. I have to admit. You get used to that. But it's that kind of combination. And then the heat. Those three things sort of really hit you.
I got to say, actually, in my 2 days in Bali that I spent, even just sort of walking out of the airport and jumping in a taxi and driving through the streets, I kind of felt this is a foreign country. This is interesting. Mm. This is exciting. Even if I am going to sort of a multinational hotel to dance in front of a DJ, outside of there is something kind of real and interesting going on that's completely different to Australia.
Yeah, and I think that's what the first time we got there, we were really surprised of there was so much rubbish burning just by the side of the road. And I wasn't expecting that, but that's what people do. They burn their rubbish. So everywhere we were driving, we could see these little fires and smell all this smoke. And it was one of the first things that we, you know, I said to our driver, what are they burning? And he was like, oh, it's rubbish.
Right.
And we're like, oh. And I wasn't expecting that. And I think that smell really, hits you when you first arrive as well.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For intrepid travel, Bali tours are all about the little treasures. An out-of-the-way village stay at Cedarman, reef diving in the blue waters off Lovina, or soaking up some tranquility in the Bunja Hot Springs. Intrepid has 17 Bali trips to choose from, ranging from an adventure cruise around the nearby Indonesian islands to hiking the slopes of Mount Rinjani. Bali is a haven for curious, active travellers. So get off the tourist trail and discover the island's treasures at intrepidtravel.com/Bali. Mike, you stumbled on a funeral march, you were saying there once.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, it was probably about 10, 15 years ago, I guess. And we were just driving somewhere. I can't even remember where it was. But we came across it was a funeral of a very high-ranking local.
Yeah.
I don't know who he was, but this was a huge funeral. And so they have, of course, the body is cremated, as in, you know, it's a Hindu ceremony, after all. And often it'll be quite a long time between the time the person has died and the cremation, but they're all wrapped up. And so they build these funeral towers, okay, which are like a bamboo construction. They might be, I don't know, they might be 20 meters tall if it's a really important person.
Yeah.
And it'll be really richly decorated.
Right, okay.
And there's a huge procession, and people bring, everybody's dressed up in their best clothes. And the women will have big fruits of big baskets on their head with fruit and all kinds of offerings, as they would normally go into the temple.
Mm-hmm.
Flowers everywhere. And it's a joyous celebration. Mm-hmm. It really is. It's kind of like, you know, because this person, according to the Hindu way of view of the world, this person is going to be reborn. You hope that they're going to be reborn to a higher state.
Yeah.
And it's a celebration of life. There's nothing sad about it.
Yeah,
no,
right.
Okay. I remember the same thing. We were behind a funeral procession, and I remember saying to our driver, Putu, I said something like, oh, that's sad. And he went, why?
Mm. Right. Yeah.
And
okay.
I was like, oh. Yeah. And there was nothing. He said there's nothing sad about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was interesting. The Balinese traditional house that we visited last time we were here, they were showing all the rooms, and I mean the rooms are all sort of outside style rooms, and there's one that's particularly put aside for when someone dies, and that's where the body sits.
Right. Okay.
For like a week.
Yeah. Wow.
And I was like, oh, they've got a dedicated room. Yeah, right. Imagine having that at your house, a dedicated room for the dead body. But very different attitude to death.
Did you find that you were welcome to observe that ritual, Mike?
Yeah. The Balinese are pretty cool about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Sort of but I must tell you this other story. I came across one a couple of years later, and they built this very big tower, and they were carrying it down the road. But then there were power lines going across the road, which were lower than the tower.
Okay.
So they had to sort of, because it's bamboo, the whole thing is flexible, right? So they had to sort of
limbo.
The guys on one side would bend, would get down into this limbo position. Yeah. They'd get really low, and the guys on the other side would lift it up, and the whole thing would sway back and forth like this. And they'd sort of, you know, they had guys saying, "Yeah, whoa, whoa, whoa!" Just, and eventually they'd get it under, and then they come to the next one, and they had to do the same thing all over again. It was hilarious. Yeah. It was really funny. I mean, somebody just died, but it's great.
Multiple funerals that day.
Yeah, that's right.
That's funny because we always laugh about the Balinese power lines. That's right, because we do walk a lot where we are. They do hang very low, and I'm a tall woman, so the kids are always like, "Watch out, Mum!" And we'll walk past them. They're at head height, and sometimes you can hear this little crackling, and you know it could.
This is not good.
No, it's not good.
I mean, it is. I was going to talk about this later, actually. We might as well talk it now. There's sort of, it's a developing country, isn't it, Indonesia? And so there are some sort of dangers, I think, that people might consider before they go to Bali. Is that something that you guys have come across? What troubles are there? I guess Bali belly is the thing that strikes people most often.
Yes, I could do a whole podcast on Bali belly, but wouldn't be very pleasurable for the listeners. Look, I've been hit very badly with Bali belly. There was one holiday, the whole 8 days I was sick.
Yeah, right.
And everyone's like, you know, did you take hand sanitizer? Did you eat this? Did you eat that?
Yeah, you can take all those precautions. And,
exactly. Yeah. The way I see it, you're in a foreign country, and you know, if you're susceptible to it, it will happen. Yep. But, yeah, look, we never brush our teeth with the running tap water. It's always when I come home, mm-hmm. it's the first thing I do is go to the kitchen and pour myself a glass of water from the tap. Because
Just glory in
the I have missed that. But, yeah, and look, there's little things. Like, you'll go to a lot of places where, you know, the toilets don't flush.
Yeah.
You know, or there's toilet paper is not an option. You know, these are, I mean, sure, you might stay at some places where you've got all that, but there's so many other places where you don't, and you have to, you know, get used to that. When you've got barley belly and you're going to a lot of foreign toilets, you have to accept that, you know, you won't have those comforts that you have back at home.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. Are there any other dangers, Mike? Like traffic, roads? Is that a
traffic
that a
roads? Yeah, lots of dangers. I mean, mostly.
I mean,
it
many
seems
have been the Australian who's hired a moped over there. And,
stacked
it.
Well, mostly they haven't got licenses, so they shouldn't be doing it in the first place.
Yeah.
look, it is hazardous. The roads are not. They're narrow. The traffic is pretty chaotic. If you're not born to it, then you don't quite know, quite understand the rules.
Yep.
Are there rules? I don't know.
That's true, yeah. Sure, you can very easily put yourself in a bad position, mostly through your own negligence, I'll have to say.
Yeah. Do you find people are a little bit blasé about, you know, normal rules of gravity and stuff when they're over there because you're on holiday?
You're on holiday. You know what it's like. People take risks.
Yep, for sure.
You know? People do take risks.
And Bali strikes me as the kind of place where people would do that, sort of. Because it would feel like a bit like anything goes, and
it feels a little lawless sometimes. Yeah, I do. Because you can drink wherever you want, so people do.
Yeah,
you know, there is that kind of risky behavior, and I do. Yeah, look, I mean, my husband will get a scooter because he likes to surf and he'll ride. But you know, you'll see people like. These girls just wearing bikinis, you know, with their mate on the back, just wearing a bikini.
Yeah,
you know, have a cocktail, jump on us.
If you come
and
off,
scooting around, and we've been there. We've seen accidents happen in front of us, and we've been there when people have, you know, died. I haven't seen it right in front of me, but the next day, you know, everyone will be talking about it. And it's often late at night. And the size of the road, there's often a big ditch.
That's true.
That goes into like running water.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's not hard.
You fall if on that, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And it is, as you say, it's at night. It's dark. There are no street lights, once you get out of the towns, so.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. Mm. On the flip side, let's talk about good stuff again.
Yeah.
Balinese people, I hear, is sort of part of the attraction in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about them exactly that people seem to love, but I always hear great stories about Balinese people. And
I mean, look, they are incredibly. Yeah. I mean, everyone I've met has been incredibly friendly and welcoming. I think they're also very aware, you know, that tourism is so important. To Bali, and you know, everyone we meet is, you know, working in that tourism industry, whether they're a driver or they're, you know someone giving you a massage, whatever. So they really do, you know, make sure that you are welcome. I've never had a negative experience. I mean, besides on the street, people trying to sell you things.
Sure. What's the food like, Mike?
I'm not a huge fan of Balinese food.
Okay.
A lot of people go crazy over
it. Is it distinct from other Indonesian styles of food?
It is, in the sense that they eat pork.
Right.
Love pork, which sets them pretty much apart from the Muslim majority in Indonesia.
But it's spicy, lots of rice.
Lots of rice.
Satays.
Lots of nasi goreng.
Lots of nasi goreng, which can get a bit wearing after a while. And gado-gado. And there's not that many kind of staples in the Balinese repertoire. It gets a bit samey, but you know, as Jenna said, there's now been such an influx of Westerners coming in, and bringing their own, you know, setting up restaurants, creating their own take on Balinese food as well.
You
eat very well in Bali. You really do.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The fruit's amazing. Like the bright purple, the dragon fruits, and the mangoes, and the avocados are big, and like it. That if you like to, you know, an acai bowl or a, you know, all those kind of hip foods at the moment, it's the place to go. And I saw those smoothie bowls and acai bowls in Bali before I saw them here.
Yeah, right. Okay.
They were kind of starting those trends, or they may have come from elsewhere, but they've got access to that incredible fruit and vegetables.
Right. So. What do your kids eat over there?
So that kind of food. So look, there's a lot. We'll end up going to a lot of sort of cafes that often run by Aussies.
International food, yeah.
And you could be in Byron Bay or Bondi.
Yeah, right.
It's very hip. It's quinoa and avocado and, you know, all that stuff. but you get a massive bowl and it's $4.
Yeah, right.
You know, yep. So we do sort of hunt out those places. Or look, my son fell in love with nasi goreng. He'll eat that, you know. And, yeah, that's actually, he ate that almost every day when we were over there.
Right.
So really got into that. But, yeah, I mean, there's so many places. Like, we found an amazing Italian restaurant owned by two Italian brothers that moved to Bali who make their own pasta. So there's a lot of, expats over there doing their own thing as well. So you can have a lot of variety. Yeah, some of the best Mexican I've had has been in Bali.
Right, okay.
Yeah, which I know sounds crazy, but they do really... Yeah, you know, right. There's people over there doing really, really great food.
Mm. Yeah, and most of that is based in that sort of south of the island rather than... Is Ubud a bit more traditional in that sense?
No, not really. No? Ubud, you can get all that sort of stuff as well because it is a major centre for tourism.
Yeah. Is that because of the Pray Love effect? Is that...
I don't know. No, I think it was... Ubud was certainly on the, on the up and up before the Eat, Pray, Love thing happened.
Yeah.
I guess... I don't know to what
Gilbert,
extent...
She's ruined some stuff. There's a pizzeria in Napoli that she really ruined. Yeah. Everyone goes there now because of her.
One of the interesting things, though, is that the number of Australians going to Bali is actually declining.
Okay.
It's on the fall.
Right.
It's still, tourism is still doing very well there because they get huge numbers of Chinese now. Mm. Chinese are now number one. We've been number one since the 1970s.
Yep.
It's now more Chinese tourists going into Bali than Aussies.
Right, okay. Why do you think that there's a drop in Australians going there?
I'm not sure. It's strange that it's just happened over the last couple of years. It's been a favourite. I mean, numbers were sort of beginning to plateau.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just surprising that they're now beginning to fall. Right. Not dramatically, but they are definitely on the way down.
Yeah, okay. Mm. All right. Now, guys, I have another confession to make, and that is that I'm flying to Bali tomorrow.
Oh, wow. There you go. Yeah. Second time.
I'm going there for another glorious 2-day trip for my cousin's wedding. But I was going to ask you, okay, I've got 2 days in Bali. I'm staying in Pereiranan.
There you go.
What is the one thing that I have to do there? What's the experience?
Wow, I've never met anyone else that's actually stayed in Pereiranan. You've got to learn how to pronounce it properly because I still can't do it. So, look, my favourite thing to do then, I do it almost as soon as I get there, is there's a very small local spa. Mm-hmm. I go and I get the best massage. It's like an hour long. It's only $8 Aussie dollars.
Yeah.
And they get up on the table and they get their elbows in there and they it's amazing. They do the best job. And it's just, it's just a really small little sort of family run spa. Yep. I'd go there as soon as you can.
All right, good. Mike, what do you
think? Look, I just love Balinese dancing and the sound of the gamelan just gets me going, that electric, that clashing and banging. I just love it.
Yeah.
I definitely go to that. That would be my thing. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll see what I can do. Jen and Mike, thanks so much for joining me today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having us.
I feel like I'm on board with Bali now. I know a lot more about it than I did. If you're travelling to Bali, make sure you check all of the advice and warnings on smarttraveller.gov.au before you leave. If you'd like to read stories on Bali, you can go to traveller.com.au. And if you'd like to subscribe to Flight of Fancy, you can find us on iTunes or your favourite podcasting app. And we'll see you next time on Flight of Fancy.